most of your prospects, 99.9% of them, when they first start talking to you, don't really understand what they fully need. Or maybe they understand that they have a problem, but they don't know how bad the problem really is. And that's why I always tell salespeople, you can never sell to just the needs of the prospect, because most of them don't understand what they need because they don't understand what the real problems are. You have to sell to the real problems that your questionability allows them to start seeing they have that maybe they didn't realize they had.
Welcome to Centricity, the go-to podcast for B2B executives, designed to equip you with deep insights into your buyer's needs so you can consistently deliver exceptional value and generate transformational results with greater efficiency. In today's episode, our host, Will Riley, meets with Jeremy Miner to talk about creating urgency in your prospects. If this is your first time listening, we're so glad you're here, and we hope you enjoy the episode. If you're a regular listener, back for more valuable insights, we encourage you to leave us a rating and review. Now, let's dive in.
Jeremy, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast today. You know, for our listeners out there, Jeremy Miner champions a sales approach grounded in behavioral science and psychology, emphasizing problem solving over mere product pushing. His company's Seventh Level ranked number one on Inc. Magazine's Inc. 5000 list for 2 years, and was named a top 10 global sales training company in 2022, having enhanced the performance of 459,000 sales professionals across 158 sectors. Jeremy is a recognized expert with features in Forbes, USA Today, and the Wall Street Journal. In 2023, Jeremy co-authored a book with Jerry Acuff titled The New Model of Selling, Selling to an Unsellable Generation. So it is an absolute honor, Jeremy. You're one of our more esteemed guests on here. And I don't know if I left off a pub that you were mentioned on, but that was the best summary we have.
That's fine. It's an older one that we must have sent you.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple months ago. We're almost 500,000 salespeople worldwide now, somewhere in that range. We have a lady that keeps count of all that stuff, which is kind of cool. So thanks for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and first off, congrats. I know on your book release is a major milestone. And obviously we just mentioned that the new model of selling. Can you shed light on, just generation and who you're referencing there and what really, led you to believe that they're unsellable?
Well, it takes a lot to write a book, right? So that was actually the fourth version that I wrote. And I went through and rewrote it four times, basically. And the last time I brought in a co-author, Jerry Acuff, who owns a large sales consulting firm on the East Coast. His firm, Delta, mainly specializes in the pharmaceutical space, although he trains like AstraZeneca, Pfizer, just all the big pharmaceutical companies, which we're kind of in that space, but we're more probably everything else, if that makes sense.
Yep.
You can have 13 pharmaceutical companies and be a massive sales training company from 13 clients. And Jerry's very talented in that. So we wrote that book because let me ask you this question.
Please.
In your mind, what is the biggest problem in sales right now? There's no trick question.
Yeah. All of sales. I'll see if I agree or disagree with the 500,000 you've coached. I'd say not understanding your target market.
I'd say that's a big one. I'm going to even go back even more broader.
Yep.
The biggest problem in sales is the problem that you don't know you have. Let me repeat that. The biggest problem in sales is the problem that you don't know you have. Because if you don't know what your problem is, then you don't know how to even start to change or to fix that problem. So the reason why we wrote the new model of selling to an unsellable generation, is that the average everyday consumer in North America, Europe, Asia, Africa, anywhere on the planet is a lot different than what they were even 25, 30, 40, 50, 100 years ago.
Right.
You read books like that I love, and there's a lot of great information, like How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie, great book. But where he talks about people buy from people they like. Well, that book was written in 1936. Consumers were much different than they are now.
Right.
In 1936, What was the bridge between a company and a consumer? Besides, like, I think the radio and newspaper primarily,
right,
the bridge was you, the salesperson. Prospects in those days, like, they expected to be educated by salespeople. Okay. In our day and age, that's just not the case, right?
Right.
Because of the power, especially the rise of the internet 20 some years ago, especially the rise of social media, we live in a completely different era. We're in the information age, right? And in the information age, your prospects know that your product, your service, that they have many different options to choose the same product or service by many different companies, right? How do they know that? By simple a Google search on their smartphone, right? Their iPhone, right? They know who your competitors are. They know who your price points are. They look at reviews, sometimes from people that aren't even clients, that could be negative reviews that don't understand what you do, right? And so they know where your company's headquartered. They know everything about you by simply doing a search on their phone. And because of that newfound power, they're not going to be pressured or pushed by pushy, needy salesperson because they know they have many options to choose what you're doing.
Okay? Right.
So that's the whole hints behind the new model, is that you are selling to a completely different generation than what you've been trained to sell. Mm. And what does that mean? You know, I've read a lot of sales books, about 1,300 over the last 23 years, about 5 books a month times 12 months a year. That's 60 books a year times 23 years on sales persuasion influence. Read or listened to in my car. Probably out of 5 books a month, I probably listen to 3 driving around everywhere. And then I usually read 2. And I go through different sales training programs since I started in sales, you know, 20 some years ago. Okay. Way before I started 7th Bubble. And so you're being taught traditional selling skills or maybe repackaged as consultative selling. And you're typically being taught by books you've read, who 90% of those books are just basically copied and pasted into a new book with a little bit of a different spin.
Right.
And because of that, you're learning what we would call transactional selling techniques. Even if you sell B2B, where you ask questions like surface level questions or logical based questions like, John, can you tell me 2 problems that keep you awake at night? Or within the first 5 minutes of a conversation, if you sell B2B, what's your budget for this type of issue? Or what's your budget? Well, first of all, those are just very surface level questions. And you're going to get surface level answers in return. I could show you a list of 3,000 more surface level questions. But the problem is, if you really thought about it, do human beings make buying decisions on logic or emotion? We've all heard it's emotion.
Right.
But yet we're asking logical-based, surface-level questions, and then we wonder why our prospects give us vague, generalized, surface-level answers in return. And because of that, most of them do not emotionally open up and go below the surface and tell us what's really going on.
Yeah.
Not just one problem, but how do we help them find 2 or 3 or 4 other problems they didn't realize they have, right? So because of that, and because we're constantly being what is happening to us every day as a society? We're constantly being marketed and sold to all of the time.
Right.
And when I say that, sometimes like speaking engagements or, you know, even virtual trainings that you or whatever, a lot of people are like, no, I don't get a lot of sales calls. It's not just sales calls. When you wake up in the morning, besides going to the bathroom, what's one of the first things you do?
Teeth. Brush your teeth, right.
And you get on social media.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're all honest. Yeah. We get on social media.
Well, I'm at the same time. I'm brushing, yeah, and, we're brushing and scrolling.
So we're scrolling through Instagram, we're scrolling through Facebook or TikTok or whatever, YouTube. And what do we see? We see ads trying to sell us something. So it starts at the beginning of your day.
Right.
You walk into your kitchen, you start to make breakfast, pour coffee, whatever you do, you turn on the TV, you see and hear ads, commercials trying to sell you something. You get in the car to go to work or to run appointments. You turn on the radio. What do you hear? Radio ads.
Ads.
Trying to sell you something. You drive down the road. There's these things called billboards to the side, trying to sell you something. You get to work. You look at social media again. You get to lunch. You look at social media again. And your aunt is pitching her latest, greatest network marketing opportunity. So you're being constantly sold to all the time. So whenever you hear anything that you feel like you're being sold to, especially by some salesperson, you instantly shut down and your brain goes into defensive mechanisms that we've built up as a society. So you instantly shut down when you feel like you're being sold to, right? And so that's why you have to learn a different approach. You have to learn how to get the prospect to emotionally want to open up. Just because you have good questions doesn't mean they're emotionally going to open up because you have a good question.
Right, right.
Most of that is done by using your tone and how to use your tone to cause them to feel like they could trust you. Okay, there's a lot more to that. How do you get them to open up emotionally and really tell you what's really going on? And so that book is the start of it. It's very tactical. One of the biggest things that I always complain about as a new salesperson is that most of the books, not all, but most of the books I read, I would read and I'd walk away like, I don't really know what to do now, right? It was mainly theory and fluff told 17 different ways, or you got to sell to 17 different types of personalities, which is hard to really master as a salesperson, right? In the first 5 minutes, and never really helped. So this book, Jerry and I put together, put in a lot of questions to ask for really any industry. We show you formats, how to tailor it to what you sell. So you walk away and you like, hey, I could use that question here and I can actually get some results. Now, is it going to teach you everything? No, because it's a book, right? And as a human being, how much of a book can you retain after 2 days? Less than 19%. How much of a book can you remember after 7 days? Less than 9%. And how much will you remember of this book after 30 days? About 3%. You're not going to learn advanced tonality because you can't hear me or this words. You're not going to learn advanced body language. And you're going to learn some stuff here that's going to help you. But if you really want to climb to the next level, you have to go through like training courses where you actually can see, you hear, you learn tonality, you learn body language, you learn the right questions to ask for your industry. But that book is a really good starter point for anybody. It doesn't matter if you're new to sales or if you've been a vet for 30 years. You read the book, you'll go out and sell more than what you are now, for sure.
I love it. Man, thank you so much for sharing that and doing
it. That was an 8-minute dialogue I just gave.
Hey, I love it. No, that's perfect.
The Fitzmartin approach to research is simple. Start with data. We use statistical analysis and data visualization to clarify the haze around customer sentiment, behavior, and lifetime value metrics. Our most recent study helped a financial institution understand a group of new customers, identify their ideal customers, and craft a plan to acquire more of those ideal customers. Visit fitzmartin.com/solutions. Again, that's fitzmartin.com/solutions to download a free sales barrier analysis worksheet to find the gaps and barriers in your organization and read for yourself about the values a partnership with Fitzmartin can deliver to you.
When have you seen people be really successful in addressing that pain? So you mentioned that we're used to selling this way in this new generation, and we're in that generation, expect to, you know, have messaging that should resonate with us. When have you seen someone do a really good job at that? From, I've got a message, this is the 20th ad you've seen of the day, but my goodness, when either the ad or that first phone call, right? You know, do you have a example of someone that actually answered the problem?
Yeah. I mean, the way the brain works is if you come across like most salespeople have been trained, and I realize you're listening as a salesperson, this is not your fault. You were trained this way. It's not your fault, but it is your what? Well, it is your problem, right? Nobody's coming to save you but yourself, right? You have to learn these skills. So if you come across aggressive, now what I mean by aggressive, I mean like too enthusiastic. Think about when a salesperson approaches you and they're really enthusiastic. What do? You get guarded, right? Because you're like, oh, salesperson, try to sell me. It's like, and I hate to compare this because there's no comparison. But let's say if you're in a war, okay? You come back from the war. You've heard a lot of gunshots. You've seen a lot of crazy things. You come back from that war, okay? And I realize this is a very personal matter for somebody that's been in a war. I've never been, so I can't describe that, right? You come back from that war, you're walking down the road and you hear a gun go off. You kind of react to that, right? It's like, oh, am I safe? That part of your brain is called your survival part of your brain. It's been around for millions of years, ever since God put the first humans on here, whenever that was. I don't know. I'm not an expert. But that goes into what's called your survival part of your brain, where you're going into fight or flight mode. Okay, so I'll give you an example. Well, let's go back to the analogy. So you hear that gun, you react like, am I safe? Right? Because of that sound. So when you as a consumer, a human being, hear a salesperson that's really excited, your survival part of the brain is trying to protect you, not from a tiger or not from a gun, but protect you from being sold, right? Because we're used to being sold all the time, hence the marketing messages I just talked to you about, the billboards, the commercials, right? So we're feeling like we're sold. We go into fight or flight mode. We're like, am I safe? I got to protect myself so our guard goes up. So when a salesperson, let's say, calls us, we respond to some type of ad. Maybe we don't kind of remember. We called 3 or 4 days later, even though we responded to the ad. So we raised our hand, basically said, I have some type of problem. I don't know what it is, but I need some help. That's what we're doing. We respond to an ad and they call you. You're an outbound lead 3 days later. And because their tone sounds really excited and assumptive, you typically are like, oh, well, yeah, I responded to it, but can you just tell me what it is? I'll tell you if I'm interested. Or, oh, yeah, I responded to that ad, but I don't think we're interested. Even though 3 days before, something was going on where you're like, I've got some type of problem. I need somebody to call me to see if they can help. But you reacted that way based on the salesperson's tone and then being too excited, which triggered you to, am I safe? It's right. Just a fight or flight mode, right? That's a trigger reaction. It's not this. It's not the prospect's fault. They didn't wake up that morning and say, you know what? If that company calls me on the third question because he ends it with a high pitch, I'm gonna get triggered and go into fight or flight mode and tell him I'm not interested. No, that was a triggered reaction based on the salesperson not understanding how to get the prospect to let their guard down. Okay. So that's just one example. So if we come across too excited, I don't mean be boring, but I mean more be in the middle, like an expert is, more neutral, more unbiased. Like you're not quite sure you can help it. You don't know enough about their situation. When you come across more calm, more collective, still assertive, your prospect is going to view you as more of an expert. They're going to view you as like, maybe this person does know something I might not know. So what it does is it causes their brain to become curious enough to become open to having a two-way real conversation instead of being too excited, too needy, and too attached where they clam up surface level. You now learn how to get them to let their guard down where they become much more open because they trust you based on the words you said and how your tone came across. It's a crazy thing, but you can use your tone to either signify trust in their brain or nervousness or excitement, salesy, which triggers them not to trust you based on how your tone comes across. It's crazy. A lot more to that than I just said.
No, absolutely. What, would you say that that's heightened in terms of tone, nonverbals, or maybe appearance in remote culture? I mean, when I look at so many jobs that are out there now, I mean, the new wave, they're like, hey, I want to be close to home or close to college, work from wherever. I mean, I have so many friends in SaaS and, you know, are kind of on that sales path. And I don't know of a single job and people around my age in their kind of mid to late 30s that are taking in-office jobs anymore. So when I look at quotas and getting demos, I mean, we're talking exactly what you're saying. Apply that over a 720p screen. And maybe it's HD, you know, but just curious how do you apply that?
The first thing is you have to realize your body language, especially your facial expressions, your facial expressions are the remote control to your tone. That makes sense? Your facial expressions communicate what tone is going to come across. Like you can't have a concerned tone with your face setting like this, talking like this. Like that's impossible. But if I lean in and I say, what's really holding you back? See, my facial expression communicates that and causes my tone to sound concerned because my facial expression looks concerned. So if I'm on Zoom or in person, or even if I'm on the phone, I'm still using the facial expression because it causes my tone to shift. If I want a challenging tone, well, what happens if you don't do anything about this and the situation gets worse? See, my facial expression communicates a more skeptical or challenging tone, which causes them to defend themselves on why they want to change, which you probably want them to change, right? That's what selling is. Or if I have a confused tone, John, walk me back. I'm on You're on page 35. I'm still on page 7. How did you mean when you said, see, that's a confused tone? And that confused tone triggers in their mind, oh, I need to clarify what I just said because he didn't understand me. Okay, that's a confused tone. But notice how my facial expression seemed a bit confused. I'm not understanding. How did you mean when you said X? That's a confused tone, confused facial expression. It's the first thing they teach you in acting school. How to use your face to communicate what you're wanting them to learn or what you're wanting them to experience from you, right? That's why movies seem so natural. Who's your favorite actor or actress?
Right now, Hugh Jackman, actor.
Okay, so. Hugh Jackman. When you watch Hugh Jackman, what's your favorite movie that he plays in?
Oh my goodness, probably.
Like Wolverine or something?
No, definitely. Oh man, what's the name of the one with Christian Bale, the magician movie? It's incredible. The Prestige. Oh my goodness, okay. I love The Prestige.
So when you watched Hugh Jackman in that movie, you didn't view him as Hugh Jackman. You viewed him as the character he was playing, didn't you?
Right.
Do you know why? Because everything he said in that movie was 100% scripted for the most part. It's the lines he memorized for the most part, but it did sound scripted.
Yeah.
No, sounded natural. And a lot of that was the way his facial expressions communicated what he was intending by everything he said or asked, his body language, all that stuff. And because it made you feel so natural, you viewed him as a character you were portraying. That's just an example, right?
Right.
So as a salesperson, if you sound scripted, your prospects are going to emotionally shut down because they feel like they're being sold to. But if it sounds like a natural conversation, it has to be a skilled conversation. You're not winging it, talking about the weather, the game. That's not going to help you. But if they feel like it's natural, even though it's very skilled on your end, prospect emotionally opens up because it feels like a natural process. They don't feel like they're being sold.
Right, right.
Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you think, I'd love for the listeners to hear more on kind of your behavioral science methodology. You kind of talk about it, but yeah, just in this book, but just reading other work. Yeah, I'd love to know just the elements. And is it NEQP is how we pronounce them?
NEPQ stands for Neuro-Emotional Persuasion Questioning. So my background in college is behavioral science. That's what I studied. And human psychology, especially with an emphasis on social dynamics. Now, I won't get into the scientific thing on behavioral science, but if you really, for selling, it's really the study of the brain and how we make decisions. Remember I talked about the survival part of your brain? That's where I learned that. You wouldn't learn that from some book. But there's very few sales trainers that have any knowledge about the way the brain works, which is really sad because decision-making is really selling, right?
Right.
It's all transactional. So why does the brain say no compared to saying yes? Why if I ask a person, would you be opposed to looking at something like that? And they say no, that's actually what I want them to say. No, I'm not opposed because it leads to a yes. Whereas you've probably been trained that you need to get them to say yes to every question.
Right.
The problem is that's a forced yes most of the time. And the prospect picks up on what you're doing. You're asking questions that force them into a yes. And when they feel forced, they feel manipulated. They lose trust. So there's certain questions you're going to ask, which actually you want them to say no, because that leads to a yes. For example, if I cold called, and at the end of that little 30-second thing, I say, would you be opposed to having a brief conversation around that? Most of the time, 8 out of 10 times, you're going to hear them say, no, I'm not opposed. Why? Because they're already programmed to say what word on a cold call, the word no. So I'm using what they're already programmed to do to help them open up, not say yes. Because if I wanted them to say yes, I'd say, are you open to having a conversation? They're like, well, no, I'm not. I'm not interested. But if I say, are you opposed to having a conversation around that? It's hard for them to say, yes, I'm opposed. Most will say, no, what do you have in mind? And then you're opening up. Okay, so don't always read into those books and say, you got to get them to say yes 7 times and you have a 71% chance of making a sale. There's no data or study that actually shows that. It actually comes from a sales trainer back in the 1940s, and their company did an internal survey on their clients. And that's where they came up with that number. I'm not really sure if that's based on science or data or their sales training and their own internal polling, but you know, a lot has changed in the last 80 years.
Right.
So sometimes no leads to the yes. You just have to know how to use that as an example.
Yeah, that's a great example. because I was going to ask just some sample sales interactions there. And I think that's
awesome. Oh, I'll give you an example. Yeah. Let's say that, you know, you're selling B2B. I think that's a lot of your community that, you know, that listens to the podcast. And let's say that they're with a current vendor already. Whatever, this is generic.
Yes.
I know you have a lot of industries that you're in. For what, you know, how would I help them find a problem is I kind of want to push them away a little bit to get them to pull me back in. So I might say, I mean, you've been with vendor X for the last 5 years. I mean, what's caused you to feel like that might not be enough for you guys right now? I mean, you've been with vendor X the last 5 years. What's caused you to feel like you want to look at other companies? Well, don't get me wrong. They've done a really good job, but, and then they start telling you things they don't like. And then you can clarify and probe about that. So I'm kind of pushing them back. Like, you've been with vendor X the last 5 years. Say, I'm confused. And it's like, I'm skeptical. Like, why the hell am I even here? You've been with vendor X the last 5 years. I mean, they're a fairly decent firm. What's caused you to feel like you might want to look at other options? See my tone? Notice I said they're a fairly decent company. I didn't say they suck, and I didn't say they were great. Fairly decent. All I'm doing is what? I'm kind of seeding some doubt that they might not be that great without saying they're not great. Because if I say they're not great, that's what they expect a salesperson to say.
Right.
So then they like close down. But if I say, yeah, I mean, they're vendor X that you're with, I mean, they're a fairly decent firm. What's caused you to feel like you might want to look at other options? Like, I'm confused. That communicates to them that they need to clarify why they're looking at other options, which opens up an avenue there for them to tell me, but more importantly, tell themselves some problems that they have. And then I'm going to clarify and probe off that to get them to open up emotionally and relive pain. Because what's the biggest emotional driver in a human being that causes them to want to change? Pain.
Okay.
Or the fear of future pain. So that's an avenue to do that rather than asking, what's two problems that keep you awake at night? Surface level.
Right.
See the difference? Yeah.
What if they self-diagnose? How do you, hey, I need a website. And that's my number one problem. If I don't build this website by next quarter, you know, I don't get to go to Disney or whatever it is. So if you, you know, I told you, sales guy or sales girl, hey, my problem is I need a website. How do you?
Well, possibly. I'd have to take a look at that. You might, for sure. Now, the reason why most salespeople, when they hear what you just said,
right?
Oh, you need a website? Well, here's how we solve that. And what that prospect is, that salesperson is making a huge mistake because you are selling to what the prospect thinks they need. The problem is most of your prospects, 99.9% of them, when they first start talking to you, don't really understand what they fully need. Am I right? Or maybe they understand that they have a problem, but they don't know how bad the problem really is. Maybe they don't understand the root causes of the problem. Maybe they don't understand the consequences of what happens if they don't do anything about solving the problem. That's why I always tell salespeople, you can never sell to just the needs of the prospect because most of them don't understand what they need. Like Steve Jobs said, his famous quote, because they don't understand what the real problems are. You have to sell to the real problems that your questionability allows them to start seeing they have that maybe they didn't realize they have. Because maybe they feel like they need a website, but maybe the real problem is they don't know how to market their services. And they feel a website does that. Maybe they don't understand a website really doesn't do that at all. So if I sell them the website, am I really solving their problem? No, I'm really not doing anything. It's like going to the doctor, right? You're like, oh man, I have a really bad headache. Can you give me some medicine? Oh, sure, here's some medicine. Take that, you'll get better. And then the medicine doesn't do anything. Because come to find out, it gets worse. You then go in to get a CAT scan and you have a tumor. And not only that, it's a terminal tumor and you've got 2 weeks to live. Well, you might have had a better chance of living, but the doctor never really asked more questions about the pain and how long you've had the pain and what the pain feels like and done tests on your arms to see if you're balanced or whatever. And what is the pain preventing you from being able to do? Because if she had done that, she might have found out that there could have been a much bigger problem than you originally thought you had, which would have caused you as the prospect from her questionability to start to internalize yourself that you might have a much bigger problem than you thought, which would have caused you to be more open to other solutions she's talking about. So that's just an example. So you always sell to the real problems you help the prospect find, not just what they say they need in the first 2 minutes of a call.
Well, and for professional services, We get self-diagnosed prospects all the time, right? Inbound or outbound. They're like, oh, you're an agency? Yeah. Lester.
Yeah.
Oh, and you sell websites.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could relate to a lot of this.
Well, you might not even need a website. I'd have to know more details. Some of our clients do, some might not. I'd have to find out. You might not even need us at all. Can I ask you what you're, and then I'm right into my first situation questions. Or let's say they get on there and they're like, hey, I really wanted to talk to you. I've heard really great things. You guys are a big agency. I think you guys can do this. Now, most people are like, yeah, we're a big agency. We're so awesome. I'm going to step back and say, well, you know, just because we're a big agency doesn't necessarily mean that we would be the right thing for what, you know, what you're trying to do. I'd have to know a little bit more. Now, what does that do? The guard goes down. Now, I'm not being negative. I'm just saying I don't know. Just because now, because we're a big agency doesn't necessarily mean it's what you might actually need. You might even be better off with a smaller agency. I'd have to find out more. Now, automatically that builds trust because you're saying you might not be the right fit for them. You'd have to know more. Now, you're neutral. You're not negative. You're not too positive. What that does is it builds trust because they've used, like, they're just here to help. And if they find out that they can help me, they're going to help me, you know, get to the right company or whatever. So it automatically builds trust in the prospect. And trust is king in sales if you want to make a ton more money than you are right now.
Love it. Yeah, that's huge. That's awesome. I'm off script a lot of time. I heard so many little nuggets there. So just wanted to, thought I'd ask a little, thank you for following that. Yes, we look at kind of wrapping this up, Jeremy, any emerging trends, you know, for marketing, it's AI and that's not really going anywhere. And is, you know, we're battling, at least on the marketing side of the buyer's journey. What is AI? How to use AI? A lot of our sales professionals are wanting us and are looking for that expertise of how can they enable that. So when I look at your version of sales in the marketplace, is there an emerging trend that you're seeing right now similar to that? Or how would you answer?
With AI?
Just in general. Just give it up. You know, for marketing, our trend is AI and that is the answer. But for sales, are there any, whether it's trends or technologies, anything that you're noticing that's just really impacted sales and selling?
Well, I think psychologically, your prospects are more cautious and skeptical than they have ever been before, simply for the fact that they're being constantly sold to and marketed all the time. And that's only getting worse, right? Especially with AI, because now they're like, I don't know if this is actually a real person or if it's a robot. So it even causes more skepticism. Like if you message people in your DMs, a lot of companies have tried to switch over to AI, right? Most of it, you know, in a year, 2 years, 5 years, it's probably going to be a lot better than it is right now. But sometimes people sniff it out that maybe they're not really talking to a real life human being, which triggers a lack of trust and more skepticism. Not saying that AI will not improve on that, but right now you're gonna have a lot of that if you use AI in your DMs. It's just a lack of trust because they don't know if it's a real person or if it's actually a robot. Artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Well, and some advice here for our B2B executives that are listening in. Clearly, you've worked with over 500,000 sales professionals and you've had global impact in several industries. What's your top piece of feedback for that B2B executive trying to just market and sell today to the modern buyer?
What we always hear from companies that sell B2B, because that's about 23-25% of all of our clients are in B2B sales. The rest are in B2C, which is normal because there's way more consumers to sell to than there are companies, right? So even 25% of our clients are in B2B means we train a ton of B2B because there's not a lot of companies compared to consumers in the world. So way more B2C salespeople in the world than there are B2B. But one thing we always hear about B2B is just something ingrained in their head is that most of them feel prospects they talk to, for some reason, are not human. They don't become emotional. The question you might want to ask yourself is, what am I doing that's causing the prospect who has problems that my solution can solve? What am I saying? What am I not asking? What do I not understand how to use my tone that's triggering them to stay surface level, logical based? Because they are humans. I hate to tell you this. Doesn't matter if they're a CEO of a Fortune 500 company compared to grandma across the street. They all have emotions. Human beings make decisions 100% emotionally. No one makes a decision logically. It's just the way the brain works. If you're in a war and a grenade goes off and your emotional side of your brain is damaged, did you know that you can't even decide to go to the bathroom. You can't decide to tie your shoes. You can't decide to say a word if your emotional part of your brain is damaged, because every decision you make starts with your emotion, does not start with life. That's just behavioral science 101. That's just the facts. So if you're not able to open up your prospects, that is not a prospect thing. That is a you thing, that you just haven't learned how to do that yet. Notice I said yet, because no one is born out of their mother's womb with advanced questioning skills, right? Nobody is born out of their mother's womb with advanced tonality skills. And no one, unfortunately, is born out of their mother's womb with advanced objection prevention and handling skills. Those are acquired skills. Those skills are what we learn if we want to be able to emotionally open up our prospects and get them to feel comfortable enough to go below the surface. So as a B2B rep, the biggest lie you can believe is that your prospects cannot open up emotionally. Two of the four industries I sold in my almost 18-year sales career, 17 and a half years, two were B2B. I talked to Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 CEOs all of the time. And I knew how to emotionally open up, because guess what? They're human beings too. And so when you learn how to do that, selling becomes very easy. But if you buy in that there's no way you can open them up, well, you'll never acquire the skills to learn how to do that. And you'll lose a lot of deals that our clients who sell what you do make every day.
Love it. Last one here. What's the greatest advice you've ever gotten in your professional career?
The first sales training event I ever went to, by a guy named Brian Tracy, probably a lot of you guys have heard of him. And he said, use your vehicle as a university on wheels. Greatest advice I've ever gotten to start my sales career was to turn off the radio and talk radio, because how much does that make you every month? Zero. It's just like chewing gum, right? It does nothing for you, okay? It does not help you. I started listening to sales, persuasion, and influence, because I was a salesperson. That might be important to my income and my family's financial livelihood, and the company represents livelihood, and my prospects solving their problems, their livelihood. So my biggest advice is to use your vehicles and university on wheels. And if you're going to listen to music, do it one day a week. It's like your cheat day. You know, like Saturday, you eat all the pancakes and the bad food, but every other day you eat clean. If you want to be great at selling, you probably want to acquire those skills. The best way to learn is when you're already dragging around.
It's awesome. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us on Centricity.
They want to learn more of those questions, because I know we didn't have time.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are welcome to go to one of our free Facebook groups. For your community, the better one for them, more B2B, would be salesrevolution.pro. Salesrevolution.pro. There's about 90-some thousand salespeople in there, tons that are in B2B. And we go live in there each week, two or three times, different Q&As, different subject matter training. We give them nibbles in there. So they're welcome to join that if they want to learn how to sell more. And obviously, if they want to get the book, it's Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and a Wall Street Journal bestseller already in the past 5 months. Then go to barnesandnoble.com. Don't buy it from Amazon. I love Amazon, but we have a big deal with Barnes & Noble. It's everywhere. You can go in the store or buy it on their website, barnesandnoble.com. New modest selling. It's about 50 cents more, but you're helping us out more by buying it from Barnes & Noble. There you go.
If they need
money to buy the book, let me or Will know. We'll start a GoFundMe page for that $17. There you go.
I can approve that.
There you go. We'll get your GoFundMe page if you need $17 to learn how to sell more so you can make more money.
$7.50. Yeah, there you go.
$17.50, whatever it is. And thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure, Will.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeremy. Well, hey, this has been awesome. And again, we love this. We personally, again, I'm married to an LPC, so I'm a licensed professional counselor, and kind of background in it in college, been at the agency for a while, and we've been using it. Yeah, I'd say that behavioral model for at least, so we're a 31-year agency, I'd say at least 21 of it. I mean, it's just radically changed just our approach, in our strategy. So we're always thankful to have similar, thought leaders in the industry, because for us, if we aren't selling and delivering to the pain or against the pain to solve that pain, then we're no different than every other agency. There's a lot of us out there.
the problem is, if you can't learn how to communicate to your prospects, unfortunately for them, they stay in the status quo. Their problems stay the same and nothing ever changes. And that's up to us as professional salespeople to help them overcome the fear of change, because that's all selling is change. yet human beings don't like change, even though we say we. So our job is to help them overcome that fear of change so they can get what they want. When you view yourself in that manner, you start to open up more, a lot more people than you are now, for sure. Thanks for having me on, Will.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.